House Special Committee on Oil and Gas will please come to order. Today's day is the 16th of September. The time is 9:20. Members present is Representative Cotton, Representative Samantha, we also Representative Davis. We also welcome the Chairman of the House Resources, Representative Schultz, and Steve Rieger. Thank you for joining us, man. We also have Mike Howard and Homer, Representative LaRue. And I don't know who else we have online on the teleconference. But Representative Pichot is in an ethics committee meeting and is excused. He may be joining us sometime later on the day, but he is in Juneau. We're going to take up today, if you don't have a packet, I think we'll have some more made up. But we are going to be taking up a number of different topics today, starting off with some proposed revisions to Title 38 and also 46. And we're going to discuss those first this morning. And at 11 o'clock, we'll have Commissioner Wanneke talk on royalty oil contract proposals. And in the afternoon, we'll have Mark Wooster discussing royalty gas valuation at HE. And at 2 o'clock, we'll have Bill Van Dyke talk about North Slope oil development and production. And at 3 o'clock, we'll have Jim Easton and Bill Van Dyke talk about work commitments and gas leases and unionization proposals. What my intention today is to take each one of these topics and discuss them, and at the end of that time, we'll open it up for public comment. So for those of you that may be interested in the afternoon topics, we'll have those open for public comment at that time. First thing I'd like to do, Jonathan, maybe you could come up and join us at the table. And Jonathan, the staff of the committee has been working on a number of proposals, revisions to Title 38, and also draft substance release and oil discharge response funds. And I'd like Jonathan to give a brief report to the committee, talk about some of these revisions. And I don't believe the Oil and Gas Committee will be making a public comment on that today, but my intention to, these are, as you can see in your packet, these are in draft form. I'd like to have anyone here, including us members other than the committee, give any comments on that. There's some definite policy decisions that are made here, and I've made them in part from the direction that the committee gave to me earlier this year. So I'm certainly open for comment, and what I'd like to do is by the 1st of October send these down to Juneau for drafting in bill form. So any comments either here or later on, I appreciate them and from anyone else. So, thank you, Jonathan.
Well, at the direction of the committee, this during the past order. Okay.
Lock it on.
At the direction of the committee during the past legislative session, I was asked to work on an initial draft for revising 3805 and 3806. And really what we have in this draft here is some response to questions that came up dealing with several active situations at the time. Cook Inlet gas valuation questions, questions as to what the proper function of the Royalty Board should be in its position with the legislature and Department of Natural Resources, questions as to how royalty oil and gas really should best be used in terms of whether the state should receive maximum value for the resources, if there should be either direct or indirect subsidy situations, and so on. What I've outlined here is just a page and a half summary preceding each of these draft bills, just highlighting some of the major points that are addressed in each piece of legislation. Again, these are very open at this time, and really, I believe what the committee was seeking was some consensus on points of either agreement or disagreement on some of the policy that's brought up in these bills.
Okay. Thank you, Jonathan. Let's go ahead and start then with the first one, which is with Title 38, and we'll just sort of walk us through that, John. By the way, we have Commissioner Ross will be commenting on one piece of legislation at a later time, but we'll take a break before that. He'll be commenting. John, go ahead.
With Chapter 5, Article 6, dealing with the leasing of mineral lands, really is expressed in a table of contents. The changes that are made here are mostly of a grammatical nature, meaning there are not so much substantive changes as it is a matter of rearranging certain sections and subsections within the article so as to make the reading of the statutes much clearer, to remove some of the confusions that presently exist as to whether certain statutory directives apply to oil and gas as well as other royalty minerals, or if they apply only to certain royalties and not others. So it really is a matter of rearranging, for example, areas dealing with limitations on leasing if they're broken out so that areas with coal are separated into a chapter dealing with coal exclusively and so on.
What you're saying then is limitations will then prevail on all the, the way you've got it broken out here, limitations then would prevail on all
what I've done here
all forms of leases?
What I've done here is I've not added or deleted any existing limitations. I've only rearranged some of the subsections within the statutes where, for example, under limitations we speak of coal, oil and gas, and some other minerals, whereas we have separate chapters within, or separate sections within this within this article for each of these royalty minerals. And all that I've done, for example, is take references to coal under the limitations chapter, and I've moved those references to the chapter that's headed coal. Just so that the information is more accessible, just easier to retrieve, but I've not changed the substance at all on that.
You consolidated all limitations in the one area?
Correct. The one policy change that really is found within this is on page 4, where we're speaking of an amendment that was brought up but never formally introduced last session, and this is in 3805-180. Dealing with underlift, and it's my understanding at this time that even in terms of the Cook Inlet gas valuation question, that underlift as we have here might not be the panacea to the problem. It still would allow the department more flexibility in terms of how it wants to manage the taking of royalty oil and gas. So what we have here is the same language as we've seen in the final form of the amendment that have been passed around in Juneau at the end of the session, and one that I believe had a fair amount of support from producers, utilities, and the state. Additional policy that's dealt with here, and again, this references two pieces of legislation that were introduced last session dealing with the direct question of subsidy sales of royalty resources. And in the proposal as we have it here, what we've made are some changes in that the sale at below market value of state land and resources is limited to state and federal agencies and political subdivisions. And although it doesn't show directly in 3805-810 on page 5, it is referenced in the next chapter that the sale of oil and gas would be excluded from this charitable uses section, which allows below market sales. So basically what we're saying is private enterprises are excluded from receiving the direct subsidy purchases of state lands and royalty resources, and that even for the federal and state agencies and political subdivisions, oil and gas are excluded from such below market sales. And that's the walk through the first section of this proposal.
If there's any question at any time, many of the members are guests, please write in. Sam?
Thank you, Chair. Jonathan, with regard to 05180, the underlift amendment there, I wonder if you've had a chance to talk about this with the Director of Division of Oil and Gas.
This is one of the, well, I have spoken with the Director, and it's my understanding that this will also be addressed this afternoon when we're speaking of royalty gas valuation. I believe it'll be in Mark. I believe it will be in Mark Wister's.
Well, since it's brought up here, I wanted to kind of reconstruct or refresh my memory as to what some of the issues were that came up last year, as there were some people that wanted to quote solve this problem at the end of the session, and underlifting amendments were considered as one of the possible solutions. And I don't remember if there was a discussion about liability or what happens if you do, you know, draw the field down to where there's only 20% left, and then you've made a mistake and there's actually nothing left. And I think that was one of the things that that was considered. I just wonder, was there any discussion about that as far as liability on the part of the leaseholder in that case?
I know that what was taking place in June of the spring was one proposal that had been brought up, saying that there should be a section in here in which the producer would hold no liability whatsoever if the state were not able to recover its share. And what ended up happening in this language was something of a compromise, which was the liability language was deleted. On the other side, we did note that there would be a limit in terms of the state having to take its royalty share prior to 80% of the field being depleted. And perhaps the director would want to speak to that later, but I know that there were some conflicts, I believe, between the producers and the state, in which producers felt more positively toward having the liability language in there, or language which would remove any liability on the producer's part. The state didn't recover its full royalty share, and it was a preference on the part of the state to not have that language, but in its place have language saying that the state could underlift only to the point where, say, 20% or more of the field reserves were still in place.
Well, isn't the purpose of an amendment here to give the state more flexibility? And I'm not sure what the final status of the liability question would be if we didn't insert the language. Would there then, in fact, be a liability on the part of a producer? Or would there possibly be? If there isn't the protective language in the statute,
there could be if there is not the protective language. That's correct. And in fact, what I suggest too is possibly when Mark Wister, who's the assistant AG who deals with the state's gas, that maybe we should take that up in more detail with him this afternoon as well.
That'd be fine with me.
Thank you.
Steve.
Okay. I think the last thing really to note on this section is the very bottom of page 5, in which what I've done just as a cleanup on language, which is getting to be somewhat cumbersome throughout both of these chapters, was to write a definition for the word disposition, which we felt would encompass the different means by which the state might dispose of the royalty share. And there may be questions, I'm not sure, on the part of some as to whether or not it's a correct or comprehensive enough definition, but the intent here was again just to make a change that would just make for clearer reading through the statutes.
Question is, in this definition there's a reference to a waiver of right to take royalty production, and also the reference to alienation of the state's interest in royalty production, and I wonder if you could elaborate on what's contemplated there and where that actually occurs in some process of disposition the way the system is now.
Okay, the language as to the waiver of a right or of a future right actually is used several times in both the titles at this point, and that would be a matter of the state, you know, under whatever agreement, making the decision to not accept, say, the full share that we otherwise would be due, to accept less than the 1/8 share. And again, knowing that there is a lot of flexibility in the different types of contracts that can be arranged for the state receiving its share from producers, this is language that was fairly common throughout these chapters, as is. In terms of any other alienation of the state's interest, it's just a very broad language. The reason that it was used was to differentiate between the state, say, giving up, like temporarily as opposed to permanently giving up its share of the resource. Meaning, for example, if the state were to want to underlift oil or gas for a certain time, well, the state would still maintain its ownership of the full amount of the resource, the full volume being underlifted. And so it would not be an alienation of the state's interest. Ownership would not be lessened. But wanting to have a definition broad enough to include anything in which the state was permanently giving up its resource.
Yes, Nancy, you had a question.
Jonathan, one of my favorite subjects is residual oil buyback provision. How do we work or clarify that provision with regard to dealing with this disposition question? Because I'm concerned that, you know, obviously we've made some deals in the past related to that, but I think that the more and more we look at it, we're going to want to close that hole for allowing the disposition or sale or giving up the rights to a buyback provision.
I think if that were to be done statutorily, the one means of doing it would be to, you know, would be to mandate that in any contracts, or say any contracts that the state lets, that the state retain a buyback right on the residual oil, because as it is now, we are speaking of the disposition of the resource, whether the state retains or does not not retain the right to purchase back resids is, I believe, strictly a matter of the wording of the contract for that particular case. In order to have a blank arrangement in which the state were to not give up the right to buy back any resids in the future, I think that probably in the next chapter, dealing with royalty and dealing with contracts, that could be written in. For example, we're saying on the top of page 7, the commissioner shall reserve the right to take the state's royalty share of resources in kind and all leases issued under, and then it cites the references. In terms of resids, I think something could be done similarly to that.
Thank you.
Okay. I have another question. Yeah, still on page 5 on 810. I'm trying to figure out what change you made here other than you deleted some language that didn't have to do with oil, and you required the commissioner to make some written findings. Is there another major change that I'm overlooking?
Okay, I think the most major change is at the end of the third line of 810, where you see the bracket beginning. And there are several lines that are bracketed. And it's this area here that was serving as the source during certain legislation last year as a means for providing for different means of subsidy sales of royalty resources to the private sector. And what has been done here is that those references to the private side have been deleted. And
but you're just talking about coal there, right?
Okay, what I deleted was speaking of coal, and that's correct. What had happened was that in some written testimony that Commissioner Wanneke had presented to the committee during session, noted that since certain certain legislators were looking at a possible means of providing for a below market sale of royalty gas, that they'd be able to expand that section of 810 dealing with coal. And so what had happened originally was that the language said disposal of coal deposits suitable for mining and natural gas. And then what happened in further debate...
Wait a minute now, that was a proposed change to 810?
Okay. That's correct. What happened then in debate in the Oil and Gas Committee in May was that the suggestion then, at one point, was that oil also be included. And the argument from there was, well, what we're looking at here is everything but hydro, and it was a personal interpretation of mine, in any case, that the argument seemed to be collapsing somewhat, that it seemed to be a means more of expressing regional differences according to what resource base a local area used for providing electricity, rather than looking at the more statewide perspective.
Representative Cotton, I think I can say it another way. I think that the discussions that took place were a move to try to expand what was in 810 greatly, and what this is an attempt to just clean it up and maybe get rid of that reference to only to coal, so that it's not even there. Basically, if there's any subsidy, it's going to be to a political subsidy. Entity of the state, not any private interest.
I should note one other point in answer to Representative Cotton's question, and looking on page 8, about 8 lines down, there's a subsection 1 that reads, in the subsection under B, we're speaking of various directives that the commission must follow in order to dispose of royalty oil or gas. And under subsection 1, we say here, the cash value offered, meaning this is one of the, for the commissioner shall consider, 1, the cash value offered, which, notwithstanding, AS 3805A10A, shall not be less than the market value of the resource. And so what we are saying here is...
Where are you reading from?
Oh, I'm sorry, page 8, about 8 lines down, beginning with the number 1 in parentheses. What we're looking at is as a number of considerations the commission must follow. What we're looking at here is a number of considerations that the commission must follow in disposing of royalty, and we're asking for an exclusion here from 810A in terms of looking at the value of the resource, essentially asking the commission to look at the full market value of the resource, not at a less than market value.
Get your question answered. Okay, I think, Jonathan, why don't you move on to page 6. Why don't you move on to page 6. Now, Sam, for the members present, 6 was definitely the one area that I think was, it's the most controversial and the most discussed, and that has to do with specifically royalty oil and gas, and we want to take it in value and kind, or we want to maximize, we have competitive sales, Jonathan, why don't you go ahead and proceed on that, and as I certainly open for comments from any members of the legislature on this, it's going to be a long time before the final document passed by the legislature, and any comments you have on this section, I really appreciate it.
The most significant aspects of 010 are defining policy, giving definite direction from the legislature to the department as to what considerations should be taken place prior to royalty disposals for oil and gas. Within that policy, we're speaking to the primary point of regarding the royalty oil and gas as a revenue source which should be maximized for the state. Within that, and recognizing the importance as well of having the in-state uses of oil and gas for refiners and utilities, we're speaking of being able to, we're speaking of being able to meet the needs at market value prices of the refiners and the utilities. Further, and in order to look at a greater, I guess, financial independence on the part of the refiners and the utilities, stating that the department should take into account or should look for those refiners and utilities which are capable of supporting themselves financially on the private market, and by so doing, wanting a situation in which, although the state royalty oil would still certainly be made available to them, it would not be a situation in which we would have private enterprises which were started out wholly dependent on this royalty resource. Also, what is taking place in this section is we're speaking of an annual report that should be presented by the commissioner to the legislature, and the report, I believe, would be very comprehensive in setting out the full status of ongoing as well as like near-term proposed royalty dispositions on oil and gas. So the legislature, in looking at future proposals, has a firm sense of where the royalty really is being used, knowing that prior to negotiated sales being approved by the legislature, the department must make its own findings and determinations. This is an opportunity for the legislature to see, after the contract has been let, what actually is being done with the oil or the gas. Also, very openly speaking of, the state looking toward the disposition of royalty oil and gas to foreign nations, and believing that that itself is, say, a significant step for the state to be taking. In section 015,
Inspector Johnson, is there any questions of that, that first section 010 from the plan? Any questions?
In section 015, we're just tightening up or cleaning up the language somewhat toward the state taking royalty in kind rather than in value, and just, I say, very marginally strengthens the language in that respect. At the top of page 7, subsection B is new, and again, you know, somewhat of, or again, a strengthening of the state reserving the ability to take the royalty in kind is promoted here by having such language in all state leases. Let's see, under 020, language is strengthened up slightly to note that competitive bidding, again, should be the primary means of disposition. And within subsection A, I believe the most significant section is at a couple of lines from the end of the subsection, saying that rather than the commissioner determining that the best interest of the state does not require competitive bidding, to come out with a finding that competitive bidding is not in the best interest of the state prior to dropping that method and going toward a negotiated disposition. Let's see. I think that's the main point in 020. In section 025, what we're really doing is looking at the full criteria that should be considered for the disposal of the royalty. On page 8, beginning with subsection 1, about 7 or 8 lines down, what we're looking at really is a consolidation of criteria that has showed up in, I believe, section 182, in Title 38 now, and also criteria that had shown up within the chapter dealing with the Royalty Board. It seemed that there was some conflict there in that certain criteria were mentioned in both sections, certain criteria in only one section, not the other. Certainly the feeling was that both the board and the commissioner should be looking at the same criteria. And much of the underlying indicating new language in section 8 is from consolidating the two sections. At the bottom of page 8, we have language that had been introduced by the Oil and Gas Committee last session, as part of House Bill 366, and this came up in reference to the Golden Valley contract, which is under consideration at the time, and it's speaking toward being able to show a greater intent and ability a greater opportunity for the consumer to receive direct monetary benefit from certain royalty dispositions. And I should say that references toward greater consumer benefit do show up in several places throughout this chapter. On page 9, chapter 00 is a new chapter, and the reason I used 00 was... I think it shows best in the very beginning of, five pages into the packet from the beginning, there's a table of contents. And toward the bottom of the page, it says chapters 00, and within that, I note where I've taken portions out of 3805 and 3806. And the entire purpose of designating or creating a new chapter was to isolate the royalty.
You've answered my question.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay. On page 9, the most significant aspect of 030 is in subsection B2, about a third of the way down the page and underlined. What's happening here is the department would be given the authority to dispose of royalty oil or gas on a competitive basis for a period of 2 years or less without having to receive legislative approval for non-competitive sales or dispositions of 1 year or less. The department would still have to receive legislative...
We're on page 9.